This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
Discover more of our shows at soundrebel.co.uk.
Hi, welcome to the Keep Real podcast, the show that explores real stories from real people with a focus on mental health. I'm Kim, and this week is Mental Health Awareness Week. What better guest to have on the pod than the wonderful content creator and creative Sophie Eggleton? We're of course in lockdown mode, so we had a good old chinwag via Zoom about mental health, music, chronic illness, and putting yourself out there. Sophie, wonderful to have you on the pod. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, currently working in the online world, we were just saying before we press record how we do a bit of everything, we spread ourselves all over the shop. So I do a bit of kind of blogging, YouTube. I'm not quite getting into TikTok yet. I feel a bit
ancient for that.
I've tried, but I just feel like, ooh, what's Granny doing on here? Do you know what I mean? I'm not quite cool enough for all the kids. But so try a bit of that. Really getting into kind of interior type blogging and stuff right now, because it means I don't have to put my face out there as much, which is lovely. And then I interview bands and people from entertainment and that sort of thing. And I also try and talk about mental health, chronic illness, and lots of taboo subjects that a lot of people think we shouldn't talk about, but I think we really should.
I know, because I've seen a lot of your videos interviewing a lot of musicians about mental health. So what are your favourite interviews that you've done around mental health?
My favourites have been, obviously they all bring something, but it's always better when people feel relaxed and open with me and we can delve a bit deeper. You always feels a bit more of a fulfilling experience for everyone involved when you kind of connect. So I feel like the one with Frank Iero from My Chemical Romance was a really good one, because it was just so relaxed and easy to talk to that it felt like just like a conversation between friends rather than an interview. And I think they're always the best ones, really. And Jason from Fever 333, he's just an amazing guy.
Let Live.
Yeah, of course. Legendary.
Yeah.
So good. He's just such a charismatic guy. He speaks with such passion. It feels really authentic and real and raw at times, and he doesn't seem to censor himself, and you just feel like it's the real deal with him. And I just feel like you can tell it's his mission to do some good with music. I think that comes through with everything he says. So they're two that stand out, but all of them have given me something. I've gotten something out of the conversations, the mental health interviews, I mean, and hopefully, you know, people listening to them can get little nuggets that help them as well. I think that's the main thing for me. Like, I know there's some amazing parts about being one in a band, but also having a high profile. There's lots of lovely parts, but there's a lot of extremes that you go from adulation, the cheers, to being alone in a hotel room in a strange country. Maybe the time zone means you can't contact your loved one at home when you really want to chat to them about your day. And then you have, you know, the album's coming out and everyone's talking about you and everything's exciting. And then be a different part in the cycle and a new band's come in that's kind of replaced you, and you're worrying about whether people will care when you come back with the next album. So it's like, it's hard to, I guess they just have the same concerns anyone does in their career, whether people will care anymore. And
there's that constant kind of being put on a pedestal, and people will probably view you very differently to how you see yourself as well. So it's that weird identity crisis almost of being a musician.
Yeah, and I think people forget that although people might love making music or love performing, they don't necessarily like being the focus and you know, at the forefront of things and having to be a poster boy or girl or for... You know, that stuff might not come natural to them, but it comes with the job title, and they have to accept it, but it doesn't mean they enjoy it or find it easy. And I think people have to remember that not all performers want to be famous, but it's just part of the package sometimes.
So what is it like for you personally? Because you do a lot of interviews and you're on camera a lot as well. So talk a little bit about how your mental health plays a role personally for you in your work?
Well, anyone that has mental health, which is everyone,
will know 100%.
That
yeah,
will know that you have good and bad days, and you don't know always when that's gonna what's gonna happen day to day. So you might have the biggest interview of your career and wake up knowing that you're having one of those days.
Yeah.
And still have to go and be chirpy and try and be professional and try and be confident.
Right, just but all inside, smiling.
Yeah, but inside you're feeling dread, you're feeling a lack of confidence, complete meltdown, wobble status, basically. And when you're tired, perhaps you're not sleeping because you're stressed, that affects your memory. So you might go to an interview really tired and stressed and then, you know, have a blank when you're meant to remember what the name of their new album is or when it's coming out or yeah. even their name.
And then you've got to somehow...
Yeah. And I've had a few of those moments. Actually, when I interviewed Mark Hoppus at Download this summer, I had had a bout of insomnia and I literally just went blank in the middle of it. Thank God it wasn't a live feed or stream or anything. I just had to be like, I'm sorry, I've completely lost what I was going to say. Luckily, he was fine about
yeah,
it.
You just
think
just
of all the people, probably the biggest interview of the day, and I do that. And
I'm sorry,
it's hard
Mark,
not to
I'm
beat
sorry.
Yourself up. Yeah, forgive me. And it's hard not to beat yourself up about those moments, but you are only human and they're only yeah. human. And if they're nice people, which a lot of them are, they will be like, don't worry about it. You know, I've forgotten a lyric on stage. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
We just edit that out and it's yeah. not a problem.
It's
so it's about like, yeah, you just got to not freak out when you have those moments and be like, it's fine, breathe, collect yourself and try and remember the next question and it will be fine. What I find hard about it is though, when you upload it to a platform, for instance, like YouTube, you can't always explain to the people that leave the comments the situation you were in on that day. They don't know whether that interview was a very last minute appointment and therefore you didn't have time to do research. They don't know that you might have had a really stressful call right before the interview. They don't know whether the person you were interviewing was in a bad way and made the interview yeah. really difficult for you. And when they leave negative comments, perhaps it didn't flow very well or there was not very great chemistry between you. You can't always fight your corner and explain why.
Yeah.
You just have to kind of suck it up and take the hate or
yeah.
the negative comments. But part of you wants to be like, actually, if you were there, you would have known that actually I'd done 5 back-to-back interviews before then and my mind was just scrambled
yeah.
and that's why it wasn't the best one. But, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's that fast-paced life, isn't it? It's living that fast-paced life and that there's no room online sometimes when you're uploading for empathy or understanding.
Yeah.
People are like, I want
sure.
the content now. I want to see that video now. And they won't probably go, oh, she might have been having a bad day or, you know, you've
yeah.
got to take a step back as a consumer sometimes. So we spoke about you working at festivals, interviewing bands. So what has been the best part of that? So how have festivals accommodated to your mental well-being?
Well,
the well-being
really,
of their attendees.
Well, that yeah, good point, because we're all equally important with this. And
yeah.
I was really impressed, actually, when I was a Download interviewer last year. So that was Live Nation and Festival Republic. And obviously, before these sorts of jobs, you have lots of meetings on the run-up. And they're actually a company I'd already met up with to talk about chronic illness and mental health and what more venues and festivals could be doing.
Amazing.
That was just like something I wanted to do anyway. But when I got this job, obviously, it's something I was hoping they might ask how, you know, they can make it easier for me and what could be improved. And they did, without prompting. So not only on the run-up to the festival, but we had a meeting post doing the job and they said, was there anything we could have improved on?
Oh, that's lovely.
And you know, with some companies you might feel like, well, I'm not sure I can say, but they made it such a safe space for me to be open about things that could be better. Like simple things like the hotel that I was in, it didn't have a bath. And because of my chronic illness, I get very painful legs. And obviously after standing at a day at a festival, a bath can be incredibly helpful for someone like me. So I said, if it was possible next year, having a bath would be fantastic. So he's like, right, write that down. And he just took the notes and you genuinely felt he was listening. And it's And I genuinely believe that the whole team really care about the stuff, because they work with a company to do with accessibility to ensure the site is as inclusive and accessible as possible. So every year they're making changes to improve the site, and they actually speak to downloaders, punters who have illnesses, to actually get their feedback as well. So they're not just going to charities and experts, they're speaking to the real people that deal with it. And I know that Andy Copping, he responds to letters and emails he gets as much as possible with any queries or any people that, you know, need help or want advice and that sort of thing. He's very good, considering he's probably one of the busiest men in the festival scene. He really does try his best, and there's a really good community spirit with Download, and it feels very inclusive. And they're only going to get better and better because they obviously strive to improve each year. So, big thumbs up to people like that, because it's really important.
Yes.
Everyone should be able to enjoy live music.
Oh, of course. It's so therapeutic as well. Like, people go to escape from things. So it's important that anyone can go, not just a specific group of people.
And that people are comfortable when they're there as well. That's key, because, you know, a lot of us push ourselves to go to these festivals, and we do so knowing that we're going to be in pain, or that it's going to be uncomfortable, or we're going to have an impact of going that will mean we might be in bed for a few days or weeks afterwards. So knowing that people are trying to make it comfortable and easier for us is it means a lot.
Do you think it's getting easier for people with chronic illness to attend events?
I think there's still a long way to go. I had an incident at a venue only a couple of years ago where I tried to get a seat by calling, and they said no, because you didn't buy a disabled seat when you called. I was like, fair enough, because I got my voucher through a press person, so
right,
I couldn't do that. And then when I was there, I told a security guard that I needed a seat, and he's like, you don't look ill. And then I had to get up stuff online and all this sort of stuff, and I ended up fainting and missing the whole concert. It's annoying, but the problem is, one, a lot of staff are outsourced to work in venues, so they're not necessarily being trained on how to deal with people with illnesses. And two, so many people with chronic illnesses are in the diagnosis process, which can take years. So while they're managing all these symptoms, they might not have the medical documentation that proves that they do have the illness, which they need to then get the disabled seating or the accessibility help that they need. So it's a tricky one, but there are people doing their best. And there's a lot of people that, not necessarily out of not caring, but just out of being oblivious to certain things, aren't doing quite enough. And that's why it's important they talk to people that know about this stuff and talk to the people that need it, because we're the best people to tell them what they need to change and what they need to adapt.
So I know that you spoke very honestly about chronic illness and things like that. So do you want to talk to me a little bit about that? How's that been throughout your career? It's been quite challenging.
It has, and I think it's gone up and down dependent on who I've been working for at the time and their understanding and their empathy levels and their willingness to adapt things to people that have chronic illnesses and or mental health issues, and whether they're willing to, you know, if you're having a bad day and say, actually, can we postpone it? Are they going to make you feel bad about that, or are they going to be like understanding? And that can impact, you know, whether you then feel guilt or whether you feel happy to open up to them about how you're feeling day to day about things. I'd say the longer I've been doing this sort of work, I've got better at being an advocate for myself and speaking up when I've needed to. I think in the early days, you know, like there's, I don't want to say bullies, but there are people in all industries that are looking to take advantage of vulnerable people, people they know that they can manipulate to give them lots of unpaid work, for instance. And after a while, you have to go, you know, I've paid my dues. I'm happy to have, you know, worked my way up and done unpaid work and done work experience and that sort of stuff. But now, actually, it's all right that I ask for a bit of money for my time.
Yeah, of course.
If they can't do it, that's absolutely fine. But it's okay to you know, pitch yourself in that way once you've got to that point, and you shouldn't feel bad about
that.
Yeah,
and I think if you're starting out as well, like for me as well, like doing unpaid work, I was just like, oh my God, I'm just going to grab every opportunity that I can get. And then it'll get to the point where it's like, oh, I feel a little bit taken advantage of, or it's not really suiting me mentally to keep doing this. So it's good that you've learned that over time.
But it's still hard now, because you, like, even today I've had 3 emails wanting quite a lot of work for no budget, and I still find that very it's still an uncomfortable conversation to have. Like, I still hate it, but I'm trying to push myself to be a bit firmer about it, because I have in the past said yes to things and then realized that other people ask for money and I should have, and then you feel a bit foolish and taken advantage of. So I understand everyone, it's a difficult time right now, so this is a unique time, and maybe people do need to be mindful of budgets. But I mean, just in a general sense, you have to kind of know your worth after a little while and have a bit, it's hard as someone that doesn't have a much self-confidence. You have to kind of force yourself to create that self-worth and confidence.
That's right,
it's tricky though.
Yeah, and when you're self-employed, you've got no guideline of self-worth either. You have to literally go out and do it yourself and be like, I deserve this amount of money. And then when money comes into it, it can get like a bit weird, like approaching that conversation as well. And some people do expect things for free, and you have to take a stand. And if you struggle anyway mentally, then it's hard to start those conversations.
Yeah, and you feel like, I still afterwards be like, oh, did I phrase that right in a way that was polite but forceful? Like, do they think that I'm being difficult now? Will they not want to hire me again? Will they talk to other people in the industry and say that I was expecting too much? You know, you just, if you're an overthinker, these scenarios are terrible, but you got to kind of push through, don't you?
That's it. So where are you at right now, career-wise? Are you happy? Are you good mentally?
Before lockdown happened, I'd actually made a decision to move into mental health in terms of my career and actually train.
Amazing.
And I booked a training course, and obviously it's now been cancelled.
Oh no! So, I saw it on your cozy catch-ups about that you were exploring a career change, and I was like, oh, what is it? I need to find out. Great. So what's going to happen now? Can you do it online or anything like that?
Well, I asked that. Yeah, okay. I was hoping so, because I figured, you know, a lot of things, this time has proven that so many jobs can be done online and so many courses can be done online. I was hoping they would say yes, but they've said no, because it's a bit more interactive, the training, so they want it to be in person, sadly. So that is on the back burner, but even the thought of doing it and the thought that that will eventually happen is still exciting to me. So I feel like it's still the right thing to move into that world, because I feel like I've been doing the music stuff and I've been doing the blogging stuff, but it still always seems to come back to me wanting to talk about things like mental health and chronic illness. So I feel like this is my passion, and I feel like that's when I feel really invested in the work I do. And I feel like if you feel that, you've got to go with that.
So where do you want to go with your mental health work?
So the course was first to take the mental health first aid course, just to learn it. And then I was going to do the secondary course where you learn to be the trainer.
Therefore,
moving forward, I'd be holding the classes. So who knows whether that would then lead to another thing, but that's where I was going to start this journey. But it would be a challenge for me, because that would involve kind of talking in front of 16-ish people at each class. And that to me is quite intimidating and scary. Public speaking has always been one of my fears. So, but I think it's good to still challenge yourself. And I think obviously the more I do it, the more it will become second nature and just a normal day at work. It'll just be the first few that will probably be a bit terrifying.
Yeah, and I think, but the thing is that you've done so many honest vlogs and you've been so open. You've got all the good stuff to help people, because you're helping people already, which is great. So you were talking about sharing content and about what comes with that. So how do you take negative comments online if you receive them, because your videos and content is wonderful?
Oh, I've had my fair share.
How have you dealt with that?
Well, I'd say in the early days, I would be absolutely distraught, because it's quite scary, because it reminds you that people are actually watching what you do. Sometimes you film these videos, it's just you in your bedroom or you in the backstage area of a venue or whatever, and you think, it's just me and them, it's fine, it's just a conversation. And then you put it out there and you remember, oh, actually, this could be viewed by thousands of people. And when you get that negative comment in, it just reminds you that you are really putting yourself out there and you are exposed to people that aren't necessarily going to be kind, that don't have your best interests at heart, and sometimes are just taking their own things out on you and you're the punching bag that day. But you don't always have the rationale to think of it in that way if you're having a bit of a wobbly day yourself. So yeah, the early days, if I had a comment going, that interviewer was crap or something, or she's really ugly, I'd be absolutely distraught. But 10 years later, I'm starting to get a bit more, I let it, you know, roll off my shoulders a bit more. I find now that if they say that I'm unattractive or ugly, I can take those comments, because I'm at the age where I don't put that much emphasis on the outer shell and the vessel, and that's not what hurts me. It's when they question maybe my moral compass, or they question something about something that's really important to me. That's when it really gets me, stabs me in the heart, and that's what really does get to me. And there has been a few times over the years where I have kind of challenged the negative comment if I felt like they've been really unfair, or that I've got something that, you know, might make them understand why their comment was unfair. And actually, a few times I've had amazing results by that.
Oh, great.
When I've kept it calm, when I haven't retaliated, I've just explained why it was hurtful and why they haven't got it right. And they've actually gone, oh, I'm really sorry. And they've ended up following me on all my platforms and been really good supporters eventually. But then you get other people that
they don't want to hear it, do they?
Mm-mm. No, or you're giving them exactly what they want, which is the response, and it just fuels them even more, and they get, if anything, more
outrageous.
Disgusting with them. So I was in the Daily Mail this week, in an article about some of my interior work.
Amazing.
And a middle-aged man from Texas messaged me on Facebook to call me a disgusting C-word and said he was going to something me up.
And I was like,
all I've done is paint the side of my bath. I haven't
just that,
you know,
comment come in, like, from that to that. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
And it's such a shame, because, you know, these moments, I'm not saying being on the Mail is something you want, but I mean, like, when you get, you know, someone saying something nice about your work, but it's ruined by a negative comment, it's a shame.
Just that one comment.
And, you know,
so many good ones.
It's human nature that we dwell on that one negative one. But I think an important point is, with anyone that's kind of freelance or that does online work, is that we don't have a boss or colleague that will say, you're doing a really good job, that was really great, or well done. Our only feedback is from the audience, people that don't know us, strangers. And so if that's all we're getting, that's the only way we gauge how we're doing. And it might not necessarily be fair what you're getting as feedback, but that's all we're getting. So that's what we take and that's what we absorb. So that can be really hard. You want someone to even go sometimes, you know, you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
You sometimes really crave that, because it can feel like a very thankless job to upload. You're not getting money to upload these interviews, and then all you get is a negative comment. It's like, doing this to myself?
I'm going to throw the towel in. I'm not doing it anymore.
But, you know, when you get a nice comment, it gives you such a boost and helps you keep going. So that's why I really want to encourage people. Like, if you're someone that's a silent person that views, you know, people's work online but enjoys it, do leave a comment, because it could really make their day. It could really make the difference from them going, why do I bother with this? No one cares, to going, actually, it has made a difference, or someone's enjoyed it. Okay, maybe I'll make another video.
Yeah, that's it. I think when we're online, it's just, you just want a bit of positivity. Just that one comment can just make someone's day, or that one message. You'll be like, you know what? my work is important and I'm going to keep doing it. But then it sucks when there's just one person in Texas that's not got nothing better to do than to just be like, you silly lady. Like, it's obviously they're having a bad day, but it's hard when you're living in such a fast-paced online environment for people to take a step back. So what do you do now? What helps you if you've received a negative comment now? What do you do about it? Are you tempted to be like, you flipping what? Or do you,
you now just... What?
Do you just...
That's a very PG response.
Yeah.
I used to be anti using the block button because I was like, oh, for free speech, you know, everyone's entitled to an opinion. But these days, you know, I have this commenter that constantly sends me messages and things on Instagram. They're not overtly negative or cruel. They make me feel bad every time they send something. It's a very unique way of saying things that make you doubt yourself, but it's not harsh enough that you could ever get them reported or anything.
It's like passive aggressive.
Yeah, and so I've now, you know, some people I'm like, if you don't have a picture on your avatar, I'm probably going to stop you from viewing my stories, or I might block you because that makes me nervous. You're probably going to be a troll.
Yeah.
I use the block button a lot more now just for my, because I know now that there's some people that are just, that's what they're doing online, that's their hobby, and there's no talking to them is going to change that. And also I limit how much I scroll and read things now. Like when I knew I was on the Daily Mail, I was like, I mustn't read the comments because I know what's going to happen. Just don't put yourself
through
it.
Preempting that man like from Texas being like, I'm going to sort you out.
Yeah, and I know he will have been one of many people saying that, you know, I was an awful person. So it's just, yeah. But I also think it's important that we don't instantly block someone that says something that isn't really positive because, you know, our work's not always going to be brilliant. Sometimes people make a bad call or make a bad decision. And I don't think people should blow smoke up our bums all the time and tell us how amazing we are. Sometimes we need people to keep us in check and go, do you know what? That you could have done that a bit better. Or why don't you try this? Or that's not my favourite. And that's okay. It's not, of course it still hurts.
Yeah,
of course we
of
might
course.
Have a little cry about it. But at the same time, I don't think we should only allow people that make content online to be praised all the time because
it's
not perfect.
Fine balance. So, Sophie, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been amazing to have you. So, where can we find you online? Where can we check out your work?
Ooh, okay, so I am Sophie Eggleton. I know, really inventive name. That's on Instagram and Twitter. And then the home account was at Home with Egg. And then my YouTube channel is Sophlet, which is Sophlet. And that's only because I don't know how to change it because I'm no tech wizard. and that was something I picked years ago. But if you put in my name, you'll be able to find my interviews and stuff on there.
With that, folks, stay home, be kind, and as always, keep it real. Find more of our episodes on soundrebel.co.uk and don't forget to like and subscribe.